Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we will be finishing up Matthew chapter 28. What a journey we have been on together going through Matthew's gospel. Still my favorite. It has been such an honor to walk alongside you as we follow in the footsteps of Jesus. Let's jump into the story. It's early, still dark when they set out in the sweet morning air while all others are still sleeping. The women weren't able to finish the embalming, not before the Sabbath anyways, which started at sundown Friday and ended at sundown on Saturday. They're going to need to get there in order to finish the embalming, and they'll need the entire day for the process in verse 1. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven, and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and become like dead men. Yeah, I think that'd make me faint as well. Knowing that his appearance like lightning is cause for alarm, he says in verse 5, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. He's not here. He is risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples he is risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now, I've told you." This is the equivalent of, "I have spoken." Jesus isn't in the tomb, but where is he then? Well, the women run off to tell the disciples he's gone, but practically run into Jesus in verse 9. Suddenly, Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. And they came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Don't be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." I want you to imagine that you're there. You don't have a bucket to put this in. Death catches us unaware and puts us in the mental coma known as shock. The unbelievable is happening to their friend, and it's happening so fast with this death that this is like rapid acceleration, deceleration movement. That's what people experience in an automobile accident where their brain suddenly slams into the front of their skull, then slams back into the rear of their skull. Jesus's unbelievable death is so rapidly followed by his unbelievable resurrection, they've not had time to process, and it shows. All they can do is fall at his feet and worship. Matthew doesn't tell us this, but when they go back to the disciples, the 11 remaining disciples haven't been able to process their own shock either. And they actually don't believe the women, but the guards believe. Verse 11, "While the women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that had happened." In fairness, they were knocked out by these angels. They fainted at their appearance. But when they go to tell their story, their commanders will say they fell asleep on duty, and this could cost them their lives. But the seal is broken. The stone is rolled away. The body is gone. They have to say something. Verse 12. When the chief priests had met with the elders and devised a plan, they gave the soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, "You are to say, 'His disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep. If this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble.' So the soldiers took the money and did as they were instructed. And this story has been widely circulated among the Jews to this very day." Stop and think about that. Something actually happened. The body was not there. Otherwise, there wouldn't have been this widely circulated tale that the disciples stole the body. Whenever you're talking to a skeptic, you need to remember, we are still talking about this 2,000 years later, because it was a big deal then. There you have it, the beginning of the angry atheist movement. If you've ever had a conversation with someone who fancies they're clever by postulating the theory that the body was stolen, it's fun to watch their faces fall when you tell them, "Oh yeah, the Bible talked about that theory 2,000 years ago. Got anything else?" You see, people back then were just as skeptical as they are today, and also just as willing to bury the facts, simply because they don't want their lifestyle to change. The chief priests knew the body was gone. They knew that Jesus rose from the dead. But they also knew that they'd lose everything they had if they responded to this miracle. Even the disciples have a hard time grasping that all this is happening. And far from being gullible, they had some skepticism of their own. In verse 17, when they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted. You see, Jesus appears to the disciples here in the upper room, and they're not sure that they're willing to believe. Now, Luke tells us that Jesus demonstrated to the disciples that he was alive and not a ghost with many undisputable proofs. Well, now you know why. But there would be others who needed to believe, others who would doubt and needed to see proof, not proof of his resurrection, but proof that Jesus was alive and could transform lives. For this, he turns to the disciples, telling them, I have one more job for you. Verse 18, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. This is one of my favorite passages, partly because it's a task unfinished. I know what I have to do, and so do you. This command is given to the followers of Jesus in perpetuity. I will be with you to the end of the age. They were to make disciples and make disciples that make disciples down through the centuries across continents and cultures, and finally, my friends, to you and me. But it's also one of my favorite verses because Chris Langham and I have given our lives to fulfilling this verse. Chris and I both became missionaries. Chris to Bay St. Louis after Hurricane Katrina, and me to Europe to plant churches. To this day, I continue to train church planters all over the world at one of Through the Word's key partners, New Breed Training, a ministry that helps train indigenous missionaries using discipleship tools based around Through the Word. The amazing thing is that there are so many different ministries, including this one, Through the Word, that are dedicated to this command, teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. Even now, you listening is a fulfillment of a ministry to fulfill this great commission. I want to invite you to be a part of this great unfinished task because the job is not done. The field is ripe for harvest, and the Lord of harvest invites you to join him. Will you go? Will you disciple others? Will you live as infallible proof that Jesus is still alive and still transforming lives? Listen, this is Matthew chapter 28. I'm pretty sure if the answer was no, you wouldn't still be here. So my friend, my partner in ministry, my fellow disciple maker, my fellow missionary, my fellow baptizer, discipler of nations, those who go out in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, those who have not only learned what the Word has to say, but will be a part of teaching them to obey everything, it is an honor to be with you, to be alongside Jesus in your company, as he says to us, I am with you always, to the very end of the age. Well, it's time for me to go, but Jesus himself will carry on your journey as you take this commission into the world to make more disciples. And for now, I will bid you adieu. I'll see you in another audio guide on our journey through the Word.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.